the Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.
Hi everybody, and welcome to the Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast. My name's Dan Latto, and today on the call I have my good friend Mike Woods. Welcome, Mike.
Good morning, Dan. How are you over in Spain? Good weather?
Fabulous day for me. However, it's absolutely pouring it down today. But the weather forecast says it's back to 23 tomorrow, so we're not too bad in at the start of April, quite frankly. How's Southwest Wales?
Well, it's absolutely fantastic today. We've, as you know, I'm in the Brecon Beacons, and I've got some fantastic south-facing views, unbroken, lovely blue skies today.
No way. Well, I need to move to Southwest Wales, maybe. All right, so Matt, you've been in property for quite some time, and specifically your expertise is in doing refurbs and refurbing property. Can you just tell me a little bit more about refurbs, because it's quite a large subject, but how did you get into it and what were you looking for when you first started out?
Okay, well, because I started investing in property as a sort of buy-to-let landlord in the late 90s, you know, anybody will know that at some time you need to start doing some sort of light work to the property, whether it's just put a kitchen in, new bathroom, a redeck, that type of thing. And because of my architectural background, that didn't faze me at all, having to do that type of work. And as I was growing the portfolio, I would find that I'd come across a property that was not ready to let. In fact, you know, it needed a lot of work doing to it. Now, of course, you can't buy properties on buy-to-let mortgages unless they're readily lettable. But it dawned on me that buying a property, and obviously I needed to have some surplus funds, which I was fortunate to have back in the sort of 2000s. So to buy a property, refurbish it, and in that case, remortgage it, I was actually finding that I was cashing out on these jobs, you know?
Yeah.
So that was how I started it, really. So it was a case of identifying properties for the buy-to-let property portfolio. And as I've grown, I thought, well, on some properties that I don't want to keep, then I will just flip them out.
Okay.
I'll do a different level of refurbishment then. You know, I'll make it more attractive to ideally first-time buyers.
Got it. Okay. So you must have reached a point where there was, we call it a trigger point, where you're doing buy-to-let. You come across a property that needs a refurb, and then you think, do you know what? I'm going to actually refurb this property and put it on for sale rather than just simply remortgaging it. Can you remember which property that was, and why did you make that decision?
Oh gosh, there's been so many, Dan. I mean, there's been many tens of properties. I guess there's a few that come to mind. I'm just trying to think. It's a long, long time ago. There's been so many. So yeah, there was probably a case where I bought a house and I just thought, rather than keep this, maybe it was not in an area what was ideal for rental.
Yep.
And I thought, well, rather than let the opportunity go by, I'll buy it, I'll refurbish it, and I'll sell it, because it was probably in an area which was probably going to return me a profit. The which one exactly, Dan, I honestly can't remember. There's been so many.
I've got it. And
you know, the ones that I've done in the last few years, of course, they're more readily recallable.
Yeah, of course. And in terms of the amount of money that you make on a refurb, how much would you sort of make? What sort of price point are you looking to buy at? And obviously this depends on your specific location, because if you're in London, the prices are completely different. But where you are, what's the sort of price point you're looking at? How much are you looking to spend, and how much money profit-wise are you looking to make?
Well, I can buy property in the area that I invest in. I've just done one recently at $45,000. But I will pay up to $70,000.
So okay.
The price point to purchase in is between 45 and 70,000.
There's people listening to the podcast falling off the chair going, how do you buy a property for 45 grand?
Well,
that's a car parking space in London.
I've been in the industry a long time, And what I prided myself in, Dan, is doing what I say I do.
Yeah.
So if I to an estate agent, I'm looking out for a property for myself, or indeed for a mentoring client.
Yeah.
If they bring me a property, I will tell them within 10 minutes whether this is suitable for me or not, and I'll buy it. I won't say, let me think about it, I'll come back to you in a day or two, not return the phone call, or then change my mind, tell them yes on day one, and go back to them 3 days later and say no.
Yeah.
What I've done is I've always maintained, do what you say you're going to do. They'll bring me a property, if it's suitable, I'll say yes, this is mine, because I can work out within minutes how much work and how much money I'm going to spend on these jobs, because I've devised from my experience what I call a level system.
Okay.
Which ranges from level 1, 2, and 3. So I know how much I can budget on each job very rapidly.
And can you just talk me through those different levels? I think that's quite interesting.
Yeah, certainly. Well, what I've learned over the years is the type of work that I do to a property is repetitive. It certainly starts with a kitchen.
Yeah.
It certainly has a bathroom replacement. You will be doing carpets. You will be redecorating. You will be tidying the garden up. And the other thing that I do is I always change the internal doors. My viewpoint is that a lot of people in this sort of price bracket tend to be first-time buyers.
Yeah.
And these guys go out to the show homes around the new estates, and they see the new kitchens, they see the nice panel doors and the chrome ironmongery.
Yeah.
What I try to do is I replicate that model for them in an older property, which they can afford.
Got it.
So really, if I do those minimum things, historically, I know how much that work will cost me. So as soon as I walk in the house, I know I'm going to do that, and I allow a certain amount of money. So straight away, I know what it's going to cost me to do that. If I need a rewire and I need to put new central heating in, I call that a level 2 refurb, and I add more money for those two items.
So just going back to the level 1, approximately how much would you spend on a level 1?
I budget 10 to 12,000 pounds.
10 to 12, got it.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So 10 to 12,000 pounds, there'll be a bit of buffer in there for a bit of contingency, and there'll be VAT included in there for your builder as well. Now, some of my mentees are actually doing it for less than that, but
yeah.
I budget that so you don't catch a cold. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And one question on that is, do you present the property then like a show home? So do you furnish it?
Yeah.
And
so I don't furnish it. We do curtains and lampshades.
Okay.
Carpeted, but it's an empty property, so I don't stage it. I don't need to, Dan. Everything I sell tends to go in a week.
Yeah, I've seen that on Facebook, actually. I've not done refurbs for quite some time, but when I was doing mine, I've probably done maybe 10 or 15 refurbs in my time, and this is going back maybe sort of 10 to 12 years ago. Maybe 10 to 15 years ago when I first started out. And we had set furniture, but we had a storage facility back then as well. And so we'd do a property up, move the furniture in, the furniture was really expensive stuff, really good quality stuff. And then we'd sell it, and then we'd move the furniture out, back into storage, and then into the next one, and we'd literally move the same furniture.
Yeah.
After the end of 3 or 4 years of doing that, the furniture looked a bit, was starting to get a bit worn, because we just kept moving it to property, but you're not needing to do that. And this is because of the quality of the finish, I'm guessing.
Yeah. We have got a cracking team. My decorator is a really, really conscientious guy, and the finish that he prepares is outstanding. And people walk into the property, and literally, this is the way that it is, we tend to get two or three viewings, and one of those first-time buyers or couples will buy the property.
Yeah.
I'm achieving 97% of my asking price.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And great. How much would you spend on a level 2 refurb then?
I'd add another $5,000 as a budget, Dan.
Yeah.
For central heating and rewire. So a level 2, I would allow $15,000 to $17,000 as a budget.
Yeah, got it.
So if you think about it, if you know you're buying a property, let's just say for round figures, $50,000. and you know that it's going to be a level 2 refurb, allow 15 grand,
yeah.
you're at 65 grand.
Yeah.
If your research shows that houses selling in that street from Mr. and Mrs. Jones or Mrs. Thomas that are lived in, that might need a new kitchen or they're, you know, they're a lived-in property,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the carpets maybe a little bit worn and the like, and something's being sold in that street for 85 or 95,000, you
yeah.
instantly know there's a profit to be made.
Yeah.
Instantly.
So you know when you're looking for a property like this, what are the words that you would say to an estate agent? Like normally, and I think everybody, well, a lot of people know this, if you've ever done any training, it's like, I'm looking for the dirtiest, smelliest thing you've got. What is it?
They know that I basically say, if anything comes on the market that you can see I can add value to, let me know. Now, I have contact with agents. I've been dealing with them for 20 years. They know me now. So if anything does come in, invariably, I will have a call the day the property comes in.
Yeah.
And I'll go and see it. And, well, in all honesty, what will happen is I'll ask them, if I give the property back to you, how much will you be able to sell this back on the market when it's refurbished?
Got it.
They give me that answer.
Yeah.
I'll then do my own little due diligences by checking things out on the internet,
mm-hmm.
looking at recent sales within that area. And there is... You know, you have to be careful because I was taking a client around one area recently and there was a property on the market. It was a bay-windowed terraced property, 3-storey, on at 160,000.
Yeah.
2 streets away, a property was on the market in need of refurbishment, 55,000.
Yeah.
But there's no way that 55,000 was going to be ever go back on the market at that upper value that I just mentioned, 160,000.
Yeah.
The maximum that particular property would go for was about 95.
Yeah.
So you have to be really aware and do your research on the values, what goes for sale at what street. Each street, they really do have their maximums.
Mm.
You know, they do, and it's important to learn that. That research is so, so important. Because you could end up making a wrong decision.
And so this is where you need to really clarify which location you're wanting to do refurbs in. I remember doing this sort of 10, 15 years ago and actually just walking around the streets and becoming familiar with the streets. And you'd know that actually that street there has got loads of kids that play football at 4 o'clock and annoys all the neighbours. And that's actually why property prices are lower. Because, and then the next street, 2 streets down, exactly the same type of house, the property prices are 10 to 15 grand higher, and actually the type of people living in them, they've done them up a little bit nicer, so the street's like even cleaner than the street, you know, 2 streets up.
The gardens are better tended, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the other thing is as well is that, you know, renting property is becoming very, very popular these days. So you will find that some streets are more popular as a sort of landlord street, if that makes sense,
yeah.
rather than privately owned.
Yeah.
And that'll make a difference as well.
Yeah, got it, okay. And so a level 3 refurb, what's involved with that?
Okay, so the level 3 is I'm jumping to 30 grand there.
Okay.
It's effectively a full refurb. So new roof, new windows and doors, new fascias, gutters, downpipes.
Yeah.
And if you're at that level as well, that's highly likely, and particularly in South Wales, and probably in some of the northern houses as well, where they are solid stone walls as opposed to cavity walls,
yeah.
you will probably have some damp issues.
Okay.
So rising damp. So I'm looking there to allow an amount of money for a damp-proof course, which will involve you hacking off internally up to a metre, replastering, which also then includes changing skirting boards. I then, because I've already got in my level 1 and 2 budget new doors, I will without doubt change the architraves and door lining.
Yeah, okay.
So my philosophy is, Dan, is if I'm going to go in there and hack off all around the external walls for a meter, I'm going to rip all the skirtings off, I'm going to put them in the skip. I'm going to take the architraves off, put them in the skip, and I'm going to take the door linings out. So what I've now got to do, I've got to damp-proof course and replaster, and then every bit of joinery in the house is then new.
Yes.
It's all clean. You know, like people think, oh, put the skirtings back on, rub them down and start painting them. The labor involved in that's not worth it.
Yeah.
You might as well buy a nice new OG or Taurus 5-inch skirting, put it all in, match it up with a 3-inch arched tray. It just really sets off the doors. It just makes that difference to when people walk in, they see the nice clean cut wood.
Yeah, I agree. So in terms of finding a property that's going to be able to take a 30 grand refurb, because obviously if you're spending 30 grand, there's got to be enough in there for you to make, I don't know, 20, 30 grand on that. How easy is it to find a deal like that? And are they abundant or are they scarce or have you got to be lucky? Or
They're not abundant, Dan, and this is the thing. People are out there potentially saying, find a property, make a load of money. It's easy. It's not. You have to keep your ears to the ground. In my experience, I've done in the last, I do about 3 or 4 of these a year.
Yeah.
Okay, in various sales from level 1, 2 through to level 3. I would say the level 1 refurbs are the most common. Then having to do a rewire and put in new central heating in, I would say I do less of those. And full refurbs, I probably do 1 or 2 a year.
Okay.
Full refurb.
Yeah.
I must admit, the last one that came along was a joint venture.
Okay.
A friend of mine had inherited a house. He was thinking of selling it. But I knew that this was a detached house in a lovely position. And he was telling me that he'd think he'd get 80,000 for the property.
Yeah.
And I knew, my gut feeling was that house was worth around 160 to 170,000.
Okay.
In a nice condition. So in that case, I said to him, well, look, how about this? You put the house into the pot, as it were, on a joint venture. I will spend my money on it and we'll split the profits. How about that?
Yeah.
Now, that was win-win for us both. And we agreed the terms. And that's what we did. And now it was a level 3 refurb, but when we got to take the roof off, and that's what I mean, the roof covering, because it was originally slates.
Yeah.
And you'll find with a slate roof, there's no felt underneath.
Yeah.
So obviously that's a very easy one to check. You go up into the loft space, you see the underside of the slates, you know straight away you need to put a roofing felt under there.
Yeah.
So once we got there and we started taking the roof off, we noticed that when we cleared all the insulation out of the loft, the ceiling joists were undersized, and indeed the ceiling joists were simply not big enough to what they should be doing.
Yeah.
So we replaced all the ceiling joists as well, which ended up some extra works. All the ceilings came down. So I ended up, in all honesty, spending another £10,000 on that job.
Yeah.
But if you remember what I just said, my gut feeling was that it was worth 160 odd thousand. So a 10,000 overspend, there was still enough in the job, if that makes sense.
And what was the profit on that?
If I got my numbers wrong, I could have caught a cold on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sorry, Dan?
What was the profit on that?
Okay, well, if they give me numbers, I bought it. We had 80,000 in the pot. I spent £40,000 on the refurb. It was a little bit less. I'd say it was about £39,750.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for the purpose of the exercise, we'll say 40,000.
Okay.
There was the estate agent's fees of 1.5% on the sale, which is just under £2,000. I put it, the agents recommended it went on at 159,950.
Yeah.
And I sold it for 157,500.
Wow, amazing. So you made what? About 35?
We were all in at 125, including fees.
Yeah.
And as I say, we sold at 157. So there's 20, what is it, 22,000? Maybe more, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Amazing.
So 20,000, a lot of work for 22,000.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, nobody goes best making a profit. You know, the other problem is we've provided new life to that property.
Yeah.
There's a family living in that property now, enjoying it again, instead of it just sitting there, you know, being empty, you know?
So one thing just to point out as well, when you say it's a lot of work for 22 grand, it's a lot of work that you're not doing, because I'm assuming you're not the guy up on the roof replacing tiles. Your workman team are doing that.
Let me clarify that a second.
Yeah.
Because 25,000 didn't seem right, because I know I had more money in my bank at the end of the year. The profit was 32,000.
32, yeah.
Yeah, which we split myself and the other guy, and I remember we banked the best part of 15 and a bit thousand left after the solicitor's fees.
Yeah.
So yeah, 15 odd grand. I put in 40,000, so I made 15 grand on 40, and he made 15 grand on nothing.
So one thing I just want to clarify as well is, because we would call that an assisted sale, because he owned it, he was living there, but couldn't afford to do it up and would struggle to sell it. And so you did the refurb, and therefore it was an assisted sale. How did you tie that up legally so that you ended up not spending 40 grand on it and then he told you to do one?
Okay, that's very good. Okay, the guy is a very good friend of mine.
Yep.
And I shook his hand.
Okay, so just for the people listening to the podcast, don't do that. Tie it up legally. And there's contracts available. If you speak to solicitors, they can do that. Obviously, Mike's Welsh, and when you come from Wales, and you know, my impression of Wales is you're all in little villages, and everybody knows everybody else's mum. And if you do it wrong, his mum gets to find out, and that's not good. That's right. Is that about right?
To be honest, Dan, you're quite right. You know, if anybody listening, they should get at least a joint venture agreement drawn up where it clearly states who's doing what, at what point is the money going to come back. And of course, when you're selling solicitor, your solicitor who's selling on your behalf,
yep.
He's going to be in receipt of the funds from the purchaser.
Yep.
He will not release those monies without agreement by both parties.
And so you know how you tie that up? Well, with my old lettings agency, we occasionally sold properties. And so the way in which you do that is you would get an agreement with the guy whose house it is, and he would sign that upon completion, this amount of funds should be paid to, in this example, Mike, and then he signs that, and then a copy of that gets lodged with you, and a copy goes over to his solicitor, so that on completion, the solicitor already has that instruction. And obviously, if the solicitor then doesn't do it, then there's legal recourse, because it's all signed and sealed, effectively.
Exactly. And so that's ultimately the backstop. The solicitor will not distribute the funds unless he has written instructions.
Absolutely.
And he will hold on to those funds. So, you know, you have got that safety that, you know, I guess, Dan, if you did end up with the wrong person, mm-hmm. and it went wrong, then you'd have a battle on your hands of when you're going to get your money out.
Yeah.
The solicitor will just hold on to it until the argument's resolved.
Yeah.
He won't jeopardize his own position, pay out the owner of the property and leave you hanging in the wind. That wouldn't happen. The solicitor he's got an instruction originally from the owner,
yeah.
saying on completion, this money's got to go back to this person. So, you know, but yeah, by all means, tie it up. In all honesty, Dan, the guy I did this deal with was a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I must admit, you know, I pride myself on doing what I say I'm going to do, and it just doesn't occur to me. The thought doesn't even cross my mind that if I trust somebody, I'm going to do a job with somebody. It's going to happen. That's the way it is.
Yeah, I understand.
There's never going to be a change of mind. Why would there be? That's what I said I'm going to do. Let's work together. Let's do it together. And let's work, you know, come away with a profit. Happy days. And if something happens again, we'll do it again. And in fact, other friends of mine have heard this. And they're saying to me, you know, would I do a similar joint venture with them if the occasion arises?
Brilliant.
Of course I would.
I think from my experiences, I've seen people go on training courses and be told to joint venture with someone to match up. You know, if you've not got any money but somebody else has, then you can joint venture and you find the deal and it's a good joint venture. And so people go on a training course, and on day one of the training course, they find someone, they agree to joint venture, there's no contract written down, and then funds exchange hands. And then everybody then falls out. And I've just seen it time and time and time again. So that's why I'm always cautious of joint ventures. Not to the extent that I haven't done them, because I have, but to the extent that I want it all tied up legally. Some people would say I'm fairly litigious. Certainly I got a letter just last week from yet another solicitor about family court, who said, because I threatened them with court action if my kids didn't turn up on time because we're trying to change Easter holidays. And for the first time ever, a solicitor called me overly litigious, which I thought was an excellent notch. frankly, you know you're on the right path if a solicitor says you're overly litigious. But anyway, so
it's a shame that people just can't stick to what they've agreed to do from day one.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly, but unfortunately, we don't live in that world. I wish we did, but we don't. So in terms of someone getting started then, obviously, a level one refurb, and most of my refurbs were level one. I occasionally put boilers in, but you know, paint, just painting a house does an awful lot to add value, surprisingly. New curtains, new carpet. Yeah, new doors, internal doors, I've done that as well. And then kitchen, usually I try and skimp and put new doors on, depending on if I can get away with it. Or I would use cheap carcasses and then put flashy doors on, so I'd do that. And then obviously replacing the bathroom, I would do that as well. But that's a nice little way of just getting started on a deal. What would you say is the best way to find the deals?
Okay, well, the first instance, okay, is the protocol is the online search engines. Yeah,
yeah.
The various websites that list the properties. So what I would do is I have a regular update from the various sites as well. So you put in your criteria, and as soon as a property comes on the market, you get a notification onto your iPhone straight away or your other phone.
Yeah.
So if anything comes up. So the first thing I'm doing is I'm scanning the area that I'm interested in. I've got a search going up to a certain amount of money, and I'm always looking. So I can set my searches, but at the minimum price first. Often a bit of land will come up there, or the odd flat will come in, and then invariably I'll find a property. The other area I'll look in is auctions.
Okay.
I'll look at the various auctions. Now, I don't know how much to disclose to your listeners here, Dan. I'm letting all my secrets out. I'll let it out. One little thing is there are certain auction houses that are London-based who list properties all over the country.
I've seen those, yeah.
And what you find is that people are lazy and people will not necessarily go all the way to London to look at an auction for one property in their area.
Mm.
And that's where you can quite often pick something up, because the amount of people bidding in the room for that one property, and it's not local to London. So if you've got one property, let's just say, in one of the towns that you're interested in, and there's one property listed, then you're relying on people from that area going down to London to bid on that property. Unless you've got somebody in London who's totally speculative, they're hoovering anything up,
yeah,
if you see what I mean. And so I'll often pick up properties in that way, by just keeping my eye open and seeing that there's something in my area for sale on a national auction site.
So it's interesting you say that. I actually know somebody who buys properties like that in London. Let's say the property is based in Leeds, but it's in a London property auction for whatever reason. He'll then buy that, he'll go to the London auction, and then he'll take it, and then he'll literally the next day put it into an auction in Leeds, and it'll make $5,000 or $10,000 just because he's got a property. And I love that, because that's pure entrepreneurialism at work. You know, you buy cheap, you sell slightly higher, and you make some money.
That's right. He's ballsy, and clearly he's got the funds.
Yes.
What I try and do with my sort of teachings is get people into property. And it's a shame, but, you know, believe it or not, Dan, people are going on training courses. They're spending anywhere between $5,000 and $10,000, and then they haven't got any money to invest. They've invested what money they've got on a training course, and they don't have the money then to invest. I've come across that no end of time, because they come to me saying that they've signed up to various courses, and they want to buy property, and I ask them how much money they've got, and they said, well, we spent it on the training.
Yeah.
Because they were led to believe they could do some no money down deals.
It's some creative financing wizardry.
It's frightening. So what I advocate is anybody who comes to me, I will joint venture with them. I've got a couple of mentees now who've got 15 or 20 grand each, and I'm putting two or three of them with myself. I'll put up the bulk of the money then. So they're learning with me as they go along, and they're into property for 15 or 20,000 pounds, and they will then get a proportional amount of profit share at the end of the job when it's done. But my love of this is that I'm sharing the experience with them, and they get to learn, and they can get into property for not a lot of money, because they really need 60 to 70,000 pounds, as I've just mentioned. If you can buy something at 45 grand, indeed, I found a property in my local town for two of my mentees. They had 50,000 each,
yeah,
not enough to buy and do a refurb. And they had to use some of that 50,000 on some other bits and pieces. So between them, I found them a property. They bought it. My team are doing the work. It's a level two refurb. We found some other problems. So the budget has gone up to 20,000.
Yep.
So they're going to be all in for 67,000 with some fees. But that's going to go on the market at 84,995.
Yep.
That's what the agent has told us from day one. When we give the house back to you, because we always give the house back to the agent and present the house to us in the first place, so yep, they can get more sales from it. So I say to them, how much are you going to be able to put this back on the market for? And they've said 84,995 or 84,950. Look to take anywhere from 82 upwards.
Yeah.
So they're going to be, you know, they're going to be in profit by anywhere 15,000 plus on that job, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how long have you been doing refurbs for, Mike?
Oh, gosh.
Without giving your age away.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, when I used to work for local authority, I worked in an architect's department in a local authority.
Mm.
And one of my jobs was to refurbish a street of 40 houses.
Yeah.
So I had to go along and survey all of the houses, and then create plans, schedules of work, and then we obviously, as a local authority, we had to go up to tender, and we had to give them out to a number of building contractors. So then I had administered this full refurb, this project, and I did three or four of them. Interestingly, you know Max Boyce, Dan?
Yeah.
Right, well, Mrs. Boyce, she lived in Glynny, which was a valley town, and I refurbed her house in the mid-80s. So I remember having a cup of tea in Mrs. Boyce's house one afternoon and seeing pictures of Max, and Max was really popular in them days because,
yeah,
you know, we were just out in the 70s, early 80s. Welsh rugby was fantastic, and all the popular songs from Max Boyce. So that was a really good one to do. But that's why I started doing refurbs. And as somebody who's got an architectural background, specification, materials, knowing what to do, but knowing what potential problems you're going to hit and anticipate them, that's really, really important. And then going into some more modern times, since I then started investing in my own right, which was, as I mentioned, sort of late 90s. I guess refurbing, keeping was happening in the mid 2000s, 2004-05.
Yep.
And then once we hit the financial crisis of 2006-07 and the banks decided to turn the money taps off, that was quite a worrying time because, you know, I had perhaps 150,000 pounds out,
yep,
in refurb at the time, and of course, you know, people weren't buying. That everything just stopped,
yep,
didn't it? So I had all this money wrapped up in refurbs. There was repossession start to happen. The market went flat. So I had quite a worrying time where I had these properties in refurb, funding them myself with no out So I had to rent those properties, always have a black plan B.
Yep.
Those properties had to go for rent then. So that was quite a worrying time and quite a problem in cash flow in the sort of 2008-2010 period. Very, very worrying period that was, because the banks were acting scandalously.
Yeah, and still are, frankly. Yeah. So what's been your biggest learning, would you say, through that process?
Okay, well, there's a constant learning curve. You're constantly learning. As I just mentioned, that last refurb, there's a 10,000 overspend. You know, we all get it wrong. There's always mistakes, but we have to learn from it. So it's a piece of research. Research, thoroughly look through the property. And as you do 1, 2, 3, and 4, you'll get to learn more. But as I've mentioned earlier on, you know, use somebody who's done it before. Learn from somebody who's done it before. As a coach, as a mentee, it's so important to avoid making mistakes, because making, you know, mistakes in property can be costly, hugely costly.
Yep.
Research, that's the learnings, really. Research and learn with somebody. Learn with somebody who's been there. What's this, the phrase, isn't it? Stand on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah, absolutely.
Successful. Yeah.
So for someone who's just starting out, so they're listening to the podcast and they're like, yeah, I want to make, you know, 15, 20, 25 grand on my next deal. Is that realistic for a start, for someone just starting out? Or what would you suggest is a realistic profit? And how do you work out what the profits you want to make are? So it's like when you look at a deal and you go, well, it was 15 grand on that, but I'm spending 25. Is that a good deal or is that a bad deal for you?
So in answer to your first question, is it possible? 100% it's possible.
Okay.
I've got clients who I'm doing this for now.
I was going to say, with the right support, I think it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got to go out and find a property. So you've got, in fairness to the new guys out there, you know, they are competing in the open world with people like myself, with likes of builders who have already, you know, they've got their vans, they're fully fledged builders. Some builders are doing this type of thing for themselves as well. I remember working some years ago, one of my clients, as an architect, they were two police officers, and they were working shift work, and their part-time hobby was buying and refurbishing property.
Yeah.
So, you know, because their shift work allowed them to do the works in the days and things. But yeah, it is very possible. 45,000-50,000, you can buy them. I just bought a property just before Christmas for 57,000. It needed a lick of paint, and that was a straightforward rental. Now,
yeah,
that would probably be worth 65,000-70,000 on the open market. But again, you know, I found out about it. I got in there quickly, and for £2,000 paint and decoration, it was a direct rental. I didn't want to spend and split that one out. There's not enough money in it. In terms of margins, if we were just to say that you budgeted £60,000 to buy and refurbish,
yeah,
and your research showed you that properties were selling in an area for upwards of £75,000,
yep,
then I would say on £60,000, I would be happy to make £10,000 to £15,000.
Yep.
As a starter. Now, I'm looking to return more than that these days, mm-hmm, because I'm looking to get more return for my time invested.
Yeah.
But in terms of advising my guys, If they can make 15 grand, and here's the thing, it takes 5 to 6 weeks to get the keys, as you know. But a level one refurb will take no more than 5 to 6 weeks to do.
Yeah.
If they do it properly, and under me they will, and they can get that back on the market, and they can get it sold within a month,
yeah,
and get their money in the next 6 weeks, then over a 5-month period, they're making 15 grand.
Yeah.
Now, they're not doing anything now. You know, they're remote. These two guys I just mentioned to you, this one refurb, these two guys, one's a police officer in London, the other one works in Terminal 5 as an immigration officer.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've outsourced the work to a team. They go down on their off ships and check on the work. So again, it's hooking up with the right team, but they're looking to make, you know, £17,000, hopefully within a 6-month window. They'll do 2 of those every year.
Mm.
It's not a bad turn, is it?
No, not at all. Especially when it's on top of your current wage. And then when you go full time, you can move into bigger deals. And obviously bigger deals have some more potential.
Of course. I always say to people, don't give up your daytime jobs straight away.
Yeah.
Do a few of these jobs. As you get more confident, more will come available, more opportunities will open up themselves for you. And then what will happen? You start to feel more confident. And indeed, one of the gentlemen I just mentioned to you now, he came to me and said, Mike, when can I give up my job? And I told him, allow yourself 3 years.
Yeah.
And we're in a situation now where he's been with me as a coaching client for 12 months, and he's now already looking at finishing by this Christmas.
Yeah.
So he's shortened that by 12 months nearly, you know? So he had a good goal set, 3 years, 36 months. And because he set that goal, he's worked and focused on it. He's even got a rent-to-rent business in London as well now.
Brilliant.
He went on Francis's course as a result of coming on one of my trainings.
Yeah.
And these two guys have hooked up and they've got a rent-to-rent in East London as well. And that's bringing them in £800 a month.
Fabulous. And so as you move forward, Mike, what's next for you then? So you're doing your refurbs, you provide mentoring, you do some one-day or you do some training courses, I should say.
Yeah. I think it's important to share the knowledge that I've got, and it's really great to see people like the guys I just mentioned to you succeeding and actually achieving stuff. Another lady, a mentee of mine, her first job, she's just sold it literally 2 weeks ago, and she's made £18,000 on her first job. She sent me a lovely email saying, you know, what thank you very much. I'm on the way. She's employed at the moment. She inherited some money and didn't want to waste it. It's great to be able to help people do this and genuinely see them getting results rather than, you know, the philosophies or theories, but really seeing them get the results. So moving forward for me, you know, Dan, I wasn't doing any of this training up until 2.5 years ago. I didn't even know the training environment existed. But when I saw some things that were going on out there,
yep. It
made me think this isn't right, you know. And there's, from my perspective, some things that are being said were quite true. And it made me think, I can do this, but I'm going to do it my way.
Mm.
And that's where I'm at. So for me, you know, I've got, as you know, I've got a large property portfolio. The last valuation was about 6.5 to 7 million.
Yep.
I've got a very, very good rental income coming in, passive income from rentals. The property refurbishment is a sort of hobby. I enjoy doing it. I get the buzz of finding the deal, put the team in, and then I love it doing that sort of final negotiation, putting the phone down, ka-ching, you know, job solved.
Yeah.
So move on to the next one. I get the buzz out of the buying and the selling. The bit in the middle, to be honest, I don't like. One of the boys said to me on site when I walked into one of the houses, it was a complete mess. He said, Mike, you've got to break a few you've got to break a few eggs to make an omelette. And even he was telling me that, you know.
Yep.
So, yeah, but moving forward for me, I'd like to just get people to be able to make a difference to their lives. And the rewards I get from that are pretty special, to be honest.
Fabulous. So you've got a website, and that will detail any future trainings?
Yes, it does. Yeah, it's all on there. And I'm regularly posting on Facebook that if anybody wants to come to the next event, which actually is on the 18th of June.
Okay.
I'm holding it at the Holiday Inn in Swindon. It's a one-day course. It's an introduction to property refurbishment. And it's going to give people an overview of what is really possible, along the lines of what we just discussed now, of what is possible and what these people can do. There's so many people out there are eager to get on, and I don't think a lot of them know where to start.
Yeah, so I would agree. Where is it and what's the price?
It's just £47, Dan. It's at the Holiday Inn in Swindon, just off the M4. Not the one that you can see from the M4. It's on Marlborough Road, which is about a mile in towards Swindon.
Yeah.
And also, Dan, what I've decided to do, and this has been on the back burner for a year now, there is a charity that I support called East. It provides, and it's very incidental, this, it provides accommodation. It's an orphanage for young children in Nairobi in Kenya.
Yep.
And the charity was set up in the early 80s by a lady called Hyacinth Lewis. And she provides accommodation for just 10 young children. And it costs just £30 a month for one child.
Wow.
There's a pastor there who's given up his property as an orphanage, yep, just for these 10. And how this came to my attention is a young lady called Katie Johnson came to me asking me to mentor her. And I said to her, what is your goal? What are you looking to achieve from being mentored by me? And she said, I want to build an orphanage to support my Nana's trust,
yeah,
and charity in Nairobi. I was taken aback by this, that she wanted to generate wealth in order to create and build this orphanage. And the orphanage, she has an idea of it being for 60 children. So I thought, this is interesting. So I've looked into it. I've looked into the charity. And, you know, it's just this one lady. It's a registered charity. And she regularly sends £300 a month out to this pastor who looks after these 10 children. She goes there frequently, takes them on trips around to the safari, even takes them to McDonald's, she mentioned.
Wow.
You know, out in Nairobi. Just to give a little bit of something back to these kids.
Yeah.
So I decided that for £30 for one child per month, you know, come on, it's, you know, we can make a difference to,
yeah,
some,
I agree,
children here.
Do you know what's interesting for me, Mike, is when I the last podcast I did on due diligence, he charges a similar sum, and that goes to charity as well. And if you go on Twitter as a landlord, you get called, I mean, I got called all sorts of names, some that I can't repeat, but I even got called a Tory, which was really bad. Although I may have voted Conservative in the past, I've had to think how much we're screwing the country right now. But it's amazing that as a landlord, if you tell people you're a landlord or a property owner, you're an investor, the amount of vile language that comes out of people's mouths on social media is unbelievable. And yet they fail to see all the good, you know, like I do the homeless backpacks, for example, for people up in Leeds.
Yeah, I've done the same.
And it's just, yeah, we're out there helping other people through our wealth. And if you hadn't got that wealth, you wouldn't be in that position, you know? And it just, I love, this is one of the reasons why, it's one of the good sides of being a property investor and being on the circuit. There are some bad sides because there are a number of sharks out there that you've got to be careful of. But conversely, there are a bunch of really good people out there, like yourself, like Francis that we mentioned earlier, that go out of a way to help other people. And I just think it's awesome, you know?
But I think it's good to have a charity that's congruent with who you are.
Mm.
So, you know, I provide, as a landlord, accommodation. I refurbish and sell properties on the open market at the right price. They're at the right price because they sell quickly. They're not overpriced. They're not staying on the market for 2 or 3 months. I provide a new refreshed home for generally first-time buyers, because anywhere up to 110,000 is first-time buyer territory.
Yeah.
I provide white goods, so they don't have to go out and buy those on top of once they've already paid, found their deposit money. But going back to the charity, you know, an orphanage providing accommodation is what I do. It's congruent with what I do.
Mm.
So that's what I thought it was important. So first stages are to start getting some more money together. We can't take more than 10 kids now anyway, because,
yep,
the house that they live in is maxed at 10. So the extra money that we generate, either one gives them an improved quality of life, gives them some more money for clothes and shoes and school kit.
Yep.
And then if there is any surplus money in the long run, we can start building up the pot for a new property. And this is what excites me. Katie said they've got a parcel of land, they've bought some land, and they want to build a new building on this site. Now, my experience says, well, why don't we find an older building and refurbish it and bring an old building back to use?
Yeah.
There's bound to be an older building that we can reuse, which will already have services, you know, water connection perhaps, electrical connection perhaps. So we could save a lot of money by utilizing an older building rather than building something from scratch.
Yeah.
It's early days yet, but it's a thought. And I've got my daughter, Madison, who's 10, really excited about it because she's so excited about being able to help children. Because Madison's very fortunate. You know, she's a gifted, talented young girl. She's a very good dancer. She's a UK street dancing champion.
Yep.
She's got a good future ahead.
Does she get those moves? Does she get those moves from her dad, Mike?
I think she does, yeah. Her mum would probably have them differently. But, yeah, she's so talented. And I do believe that by empowering her and giving her the idea of this, that one day she can be involved for the long term. I think that's so empowering, really.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because when we do the backpacks, I take my two kids, who are 7 and 10 now, they've been out with me and handed out backpacks to homeless people, because I want them to understand how fortunate they are, and they definitely understand it. And they spot homeless people, whereas other people just seem to miss them. And I don't see them sometimes, and she's like, oh, look, Daddy, there's one there. And it's just really important that we teach this stuff onto our kids, because if we want to make a difference in the world, first of all, we have to make a difference to ourselves, then we make it to our families, and then we move out to the rest of the world, because then we're in an empowered position to be able to do that. If we weren't in an empowered position, we would find it much more difficult, which is why I think most people, or many people, don't help other people. It's because they feel in a position where they're not empowered. Whereas, actually, we're all empowered.
Absolutely we are. But you know yourself, there are some people who put a lot of things before themselves. There are some very, very charitable people out there.
Yeah.
I just found that as I was building my career up, I felt the need to create a good, stable environment for my family.
Yeah.
And now that I've done that, I can now start looking outwards. So there's a saying, is that charity begins at home. Get yourself sorted at home first.
Yeah.
Get everything stable. And then, you know, you're in a better position to help other people, because you don't want to get involved in a charity half-heartedly.
Yeah.
You're in something that you need to be committed to. And I'm looking forward to getting more involved in it now.
Yeah.
Certainly. But so going back to your question, the event is £47, and £30 of that will be donated towards the charity. Yeah.
Fabulous. Right, Mike, thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate it. And we'll speak to you soon. You too. Take care.
The Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.